speaking also today with Barbara Ford, who's a retired clinical social worker. Barbara was a student of and collaborator with the groundbreaking eco-psychologist Joanna Macy. She's a longtime climate justice activist and artivist who has volunteered for the past 5 years with 350PDX to help create art-based actions and resilience training for climate justice. Thank you for joining me today, Barbara. So we're taping on Friday, September 11th, and 10% of the state is facing the threat of possible evacuation as wildfires burn out of control. And many people are really struggling in the face of evidence that climate change is progressing more quickly than was predicted in some studies that were once deemed exaggerated or hyperbolic. So can you talk a little bit about this concept of radical hope?
First of all, I want to say that I do not equate hope with optimism. There are two different things. And hope is sort of a trigger word for a lot of people right now because there's so much, right, that's just going on right now. It's not just about the fires. It's also about, it's like layers of trauma that we are experiencing. And various members of our community are experiencing it, have been experiencing it longer or more intensively than others.
Yeah, and clearly this is in the midst of the pandemic, and it's exacerbating the respiratory effects that make people vulnerable to the pandemic, and then there's the economic fallout from the pandemic.
Yes, and it really is. This moment is really illustrating the intersectionality of all the issues that housing justice is connected to, climate justice is connected to, food justice is connected to, fascism is connected to, racial justice is connected. This is one of the moments where there's an uncovering of things that have always existed that are becoming more visible for people to sort of get, oh, we're all learning on our own levels and seeing new eyes what the situation actually has been for a lot of people, but is coming to affect more and more. And this moment of I'm sitting here sealed in my house, which I'm lucky to have a house to be sealed in, surrounded by poison air, and also have been contending with all the other issues that, you know, we just talked about. And also, we also have personal issues. My mother just died. And so I'm contending with that as well in my body and my heart. So, and everybody has their own personal processes. So what I want to say about this idea of active hope or radical hope, whatever word you want to do, is that it really isn't about some idea that you hold on to that everything is going to be okay. That's not what it is. It really is about a kind of a stance that you take in the face of all these things of how do you want to be in the world? Like no matter what's happening, because so much is still going to yet to happen. Who will I be in the world and where do I find meaning? I want to give a little quote from my favorite quote on hope from the writer Rebecca Solnit. She says, "Hope is not a lottery ticket you can sit on the sofa and clutch feeling lucky. It is an axe you break down doors with in an emergency. Hope should shove you out the door because it will take everything you have to steer the future away from endless war, from the annihilation of the earth's treasures and the grinding down of the poor and marginal. To hope is to give yourself to the future, and that commitment to the future is what makes the present inhabitable." That one quote is something that I hold on to of how do we make the present inhabitable, and how do we stay present without turning away and without shutting down? Because that would be a very common and natural response to what's happening. And that doesn't mean we don't stop and take care of ourselves and get away from it some, but there is something about who do we want to be? Do we want to be somebody who will offer themselves in one way or another as best we're able to serve justice or to serve the world? Or do we want to be somebody who just gives up?
Certainly Rebecca Solnit, particularly in a book, A Paradise Built in Hell, has written extensively about some of the worst aspects of late climate change. So she's certainly coming at it from a reality-based perspective. And I really appreciate the connection that you made earlier to housing justice, especially given that so many houseless people in Portland have not only been breathing tear gas night after night from the police riots, but now are also breathing forest ash night after night and all of that in the midst of the pandemic, in which people with respiratory problems are particularly vulnerable.
Right. And also just want to note that the source of police oppression, the source of climate change, the source of fascism, et cetera, all come from the same source, which is that power over consciousness, which is part of the colonial mindset that this country was founded upon. One of the things that I appreciate about the work that I've been trying to do and what Joanna Macy was teaching was everything needs to be done. So you might as well do what your heart calls you to do. Not everybody can be on the front lines. Not everybody can be a journalist. There needs to be the people who will be the people who will feed the people. There needs to be the people who will take care of the children. We need the artists also and the musicians, et cetera, to kind of hold our hearts and remind us what we're fighting for and what we love. There's so many ways to participate in the healing of the world. If that's the, if you believe in an interconnected world, then you have to understand that we all bring particular gifts that serve, sort of like a permaculture garden. Each creature in the garden has a particular skill set or particular role. And if everybody was a pollinator, it wouldn't work, right? So there's a part about my version of hope that's like finding out what my role is in this moment. And it may be that people feel called to the front lines, but they may feel called to other things as well. Or they may really have limited personal resources and their job is to just sort of keep themselves going or keep their family going in the midst of all this.
So, you know, I'm really struck by the connections that you're making to colonialism and the extent to which colonialism is really rooted in a kind of ideology of rapacious structural violence, militarized violence, and really an ideology of kind of objectification and disposability, in which both like ecocide and genocide are both justified. And I think it's interesting that we're talking on 9/11, and we've been hearing about the massive numbers of people who've been displaced by the U.S. wars. But there's no public dialogue about the fact that the U.S. military is the largest single institutional generator of carbon emissions globally. So I just wanted to put that out there. But I think you're saying basically don't allow yourself to be overwhelmed by feeling like you have to do everything.
Yeah, because A, you can't. And B, that's not how it works in an interconnected world. Because we need it all. You know, we need people who are drawn to veterans' rights to do their work and, you know, to do that work. And we need people who are, I mean, I can name any number of things that are, you know, absolutely necessary, immigration rights, et cetera, or just healing a piece of land, for example, or, you know, supporting sovereign land sovereignty. Part of the experience of this radical hope is having folks understand that they can choose to dedicate their hearts and discern, like, what is mine to do in this moment? And that doesn't mean that I'm saying that everybody has to do something really, really important right now. Some of us are just in a place of just, you know, survival, you know, roles and providing more support. And that means that could mean any number of things, or providing some version of mentoring or some version of just listening and care. It's an ongoing journey. Nobody usually does one thing for their whole life.
It seems like it's worth noting, too, that it's often the labor that's provided by women in the form of childcare or care for the elderly that is often seen as secondary at best. But now more than ever, we really need people to be dedicated to the care of people who are being left behind, even while we address the structural roots of their disposability.
Right.
Barbara, thank you so much for making the time to talk to me. I've been talking with Barbara Ford, who is a retired clinical social worker who has volunteered for the past 5 years with 350 PDX. Barbara, can you tell people how they can learn more about your work?
Sure. I have a website. It's Barbara Ford, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, Ford.net. And you'll see information there about workshops that I do, writing, art, things like that. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, Barbara, thank you so much. This has been Desiree Helgers for the Old Mobile Radio.